in Seattle,
Seattle.
And you need to buy yourself a home. We'll be right there for you,
because
we're the realtors
that you can trust.
So go to RodandConcertDown.com.
Don't go anywhere unless you want to. It's the Ron and Don Show, starring Ron and Don, and sometimes me, at ronanddon.com.
Hey, you guys, what's going on? Welcome to episode 705 of the Ron and Don Show on a Friday. It's the real estate edition of the Ron and Don Show every Monday, Wednesday, Thursday. We share the things. What have we been broadcasting? Almost 30 years between Trestle Radio and this podcast. We talk about things that we've always talked about in the great specific Northwest, as my son likes to call it. What's going on in sports, what's going on in pop culture, what's going on in the news. But then we like to take a moment on Friday and tell you what we're learning in our real estate business. And Ron, a very, very big story this week about a settlement with the National Association of Realtors, who I have never really liked anyway. What is your take, and in a nutshell, what was the settlement?
Yeah, so let's set up the players in this situation, because I think if you are just not in the industry, you may or may not know. So National Association of Realtors, what is it? It is a professional organization that gets dues from its members, and it's a similar to a lot of things. It's not really a union, but it represents its members, and it has a political lobbying arm. They also try to do educational services for their members, where they'll have seminars, they have attorneys and training people. And then they also are in the business in many parts of America where they are in control of and have a stake in some of the MLSs, the multiple listing services. So this thing has been around for a long time. The way that it works is that a member pays, I think, when we were with Windermere, we were required to be a realtor, and I think it was almost $700 per year in dues that we had to be there. And so the only way you can call someone a realtor is if you are a member of the National Association of Realtors. So it's kind of like the word Xerox. Like, you can have a copier that makes copies, but it's not a Xerox unless it's made by Xerox. So if you're going to, you can be a real estate agent and not be a realtor, but you can only be a realtor if you're a member paying dues to the National Association of
Realtors. It's like Parmesan cheese. Parmesan is actually owned by Kraft. They own Parmesan cheese. So other cheeses can't put Parmesan on there.
It can be Parmigiano or Reggiano, though.
That's right. Yeah.
So it's an advocacy group, a lobby group, a training group. And over the years, they've really have tried to, in some ways, I think there were periods of time that the National Association of Realtors was doing stuff to protect the industry and to guide the industry and to have lobbyists in Washington, D.C. or in Olympia to sort of try to chart the course for legislation and have a balanced view. And a lot of times the contracts that we write, there are protections for buyers and sellers and consumers in these things. Recently, though, I chose to not be a member of the National Association of Realtors. And the reason for me goes back before this lawsuit. The reason for me is that I felt like they were not advocating for me as an individual agent, that they had agendas that I really had no say in and very little interest in. Then a while back, the president of the National Association of Realtors lost his job because there were sexual misconduct allegations that came out from at least three different women and possibly more at the national level. And he was forced to resign. And so that guy just seemed like a total chucklehead and came up through the ranks and was using the NAR and the very large salary that he got as sort of his personal playground to be a misogynist. And I didn't like that. And then when this lawsuit settlement came down, I don't particularly think that the NAR looked very, very good. And so there was a case in Missouri. The NAR lost. It was a $1.8 billion verdict. As soon as that happened, at least a dozen other jurisdictions filed similar lawsuits. And so what the NAR did is, like, we can't afford to do this. So they went to the Department of Justice and said, we want to settle. And Keller Williams also lost in that Missouri suit, and so they wanted to settle. And I think Berkshire Hathaway was a party to that suit, and they wanted to settle. So they went to the Department of Justice on a national level and said, look, we cannot defend ourselves from 100 of these lawsuits in every major market in America, and even minor market in America. And so we would like to do a global settlement with the Department of Justice to settle these claims. And so that's what's on the table now is, I think it's 400 some odd million dollars with the Department of Justice to say, we are going to fall on our sword. We're going to take our medicine and we're going to make some changes in the industry. Will you accept the settlement? As we're recording today, I do not believe that the settlement has been accepted and signed off on by a judge yet, but it is in the works. It looks like there's a lot of momentum to get this thing signed and to get it settled, but hopefully that provides the context of what we're talking about. So meanwhile, the rest of the industry and ancillary industries are saying this is going to have a revolutionary effect on how real estate transactions are done.
Do you think it is?
I think that it can. The biggest thing is around commissions. And so the linchpin of this lawsuit is this. Is the lawyers for the other side came in and they said, the National Association of Realtors and some of these other groups are keeping commissions for individual agents and brokerages artificially high. Here's how we're going to prove this. We're going to go around the world to other countries and we're going to see what other affluent countries in the world, what they pay in commissions. And they said, look at Germany, look at the UK, look at some European countries. They're buying million-dollar houses and condos, and they're paying less commissions to the agents. Why is the United States so expensive? And so they pointed the finger at this commission structure and some of the practices that have been developed over the years on opacity of terms, sort of consumers not being informed about fees and about the structure. And I think a lot of those accusations are valid. I think a lot of those accusations hold merit, and that's why they lost the case. However, there are some mechanisms on a practical level that make sense in America. And I'll give you the biggest example that we explain every time with a client. When you sell your house, and you if it's been a while since you bought or sold a house, you may not remember this. When you are the seller of a house, so let's call it a million-dollar house because it's easy to do the math. You, when you get your settlement statement at the end of this transaction, the master settlement statement, you're going to look down on your side of the column, on your side of the ledger, and you're going to see that you paid your real estate agent's commission fee, his compensation or her compensation. And then the line right below that is you also paid the compensation for the people that bought your house. And so this is the thing that made people mad. They're like, wait a minute. Why am I paying for my agent's fees and their agent's fees? We're in a sense, we're in an adversarial relationship. I'm trying to get the most money I can for my property with the fewest contingencies as the seller. The buyer's trying to get the least, the lowest price possible with the most contingencies. So by nature, we are adversarial and we're trying to negotiate the best terms. Why would I pay their commission? And that makes a lot of sense. But here's why that rule or why it developed that way in the United States. For the past 100 years, most people, I would say 99% of people, maybe 95% of people, it takes them everything they've got to get their down payment, right? So when you go to a bank and you're like, I would like to buy this house, they say to you, can you put 20% down? And so for this $1 million house, that's $200,000 in cash that they're you're expecting you to put down. If you're less than 200 grand, you got to get into different loan programs. The interest rates are higher. That is more difficult. You're paying private mortgage insurance. The cost of that house goes up dramatically for the consumer if you can't put 20% down. So for most people, 200 grand is everything they've got. And so they're scraping together, cashing out stocks. They're selling things like people. It's everything you can muster to get that 20% down. So what they don't have is an additional 2.5-3% of the price of the house, $25,000, to then pay their agent. And so what the industry did decades ago is they said, listen, this is what we're going to do. We're going to build that price, the commission for the buyers. We're going to build that into the loan. We're going to build that. We're going to bake it in to the price of the house. We're going to bake it into all the appraisals. We're going to bake it in to all the algorithms. That's just included in the price of the house. And so by letting a buyer finance it over the 30-year loan, they are able to afford to pay their agent. But the mechanism for that is they give all their money to the seller. And then the seller's broker has agreed with the buyer's broker, we're going to kick back this money to you that's already been financed. So it's built into the loan, but we're going to then pay you out of the share of the commission. It's a bit of a shell game. It's a bit of a Rube Goldberg circuitous route to get that money, but that's why it exists. I get the logic of it, because people don't have the cash on hand, but that's what is now being questioned. And that's what is now being on the table, because in a market like Seattle, many people would have the cash. There are people that work in tech or have done very well for themselves that can not only afford to buy the house in cash, but also have the cash to pay their agent. And so this is now what's up for grabs. And we're going to see how the market evolves. We've already seen with one of our clients where they said, I'm only going to give 2% to the buyers, and their house sold very quickly. We have other agents where you've talked about other situations. I have a situation right now where I just met with our client yesterday, and we're going to deserve more than 3%. The amount of work it's going to take to bring this house to market and get a successful result for this person, that we should get paid more than 3%. But that's sort of the argument that's out there on the table.
Yeah, what is your worth? Like, are there attorneys out there that are worth $60 an hour, that are worth $6 an hour, that are worth $600? Yeah, it's like that in every profession. And I do think sometimes on the buyer side, and I encourage our sellers, I said, hey, this is a $1.5 million deal. 2% of that to the buyer that just has to walk in and put their feet up, move their furniture in. I said, this is an FU house. Everybody's going to want this house. This house is perfection. Everyone's going to compete for it. 1.5 times 2% is still a lot of money. That agent made a lot of money. That's the first thing he asked me, though, when he called. He said, why'd you guys cut into my commission? And I said, you don't have to do anything. And I said, we cut into our commission over on our side too. We didn't charge a full commission because our seller ended up doing a lot of the work themselves. They deserve to pay less to us and to you. And he ended up agreeing with that. And I said, you still make good money. We still did fine. Everything's fine. But they deserve to put more money in their pocket. But this particular seller is unusual. You know, one in 40 homes in America is hoarded. And I would say half the homes that we walk into, I wouldn't call them hoarded, but I would say there's a lot of collectors. People don't get rid of their stuff. And a lot of the homes that we walk into on top of that have deferred maintenance. The furnace is 30 years old. The water tank is going to go. Our inspector comes in with the moisture meter and there's moisture behind the walls and in the shower. I was looking at a $1.8 million house yesterday, and you get under the house and there have been rats in that house everywhere down in the crawl space. So a lot of these homes do have deferred maintenance. And if the owner of that home is going to do all that work, then they deserve a deal. But A lot of times it's not the owner of the home, it's the real estate agent. And it's the real estate agent not only going out and getting the work done and becoming the project manager, but then also they are using their leverage. Like, I guarantee you, my electrician, my plumber, my contractor, my painter, they're going to do work for you for less money than they would do it if you picked up the phone and called them yourself, because you don't have the leverage that Ron and I have. We have the leverage because we keep them busy all the time, so they want to keep us happy. They keep us happy by pushing us to the front of the line of all the work that they're doing, doing a really good job for our clients. And so in the end, we end up paying for ourselves because of our expertise, the people that we bring to the party that are going to work on your house, they're going to do it for a lot less dough. And then also the strategy of selling that house. People right now, you don't need to go with the MLS. You can throw out a for sale sign and you can sell your house. You can buy a house right now. You don't need an agent to do that. But I will say, if you don't have an expert in a market like Seattle, you're really going to suffer.
And I'll give you a great example on this. We had a client before that was a very skilled attorney. And attorneys are allowed, experts in contract, they're experts in law. And we were explaining a specific technique, a specific strategy to this person, and it wasn't self-evident to them.
They didn't get it.
Even though that they're an attorney, and I would want to hire this attorney if I needed representation in a trial, like, this person's brilliant. It wasn't their flavor of law. And so even though they went to law school, graduated law school, operated at a high level, win multi-million dollar cases, they didn't know this part of the law.
Yeah.
And so that's the sort of thing where it's like, are they capable of buying out? Of course.
Yeah.
They're way more educated than I am.
And let me stick up for the buyer's agent on the other hand. They say buyers, well, maybe a seller's agent, because you're helping do all this work to bring it to market, and you're helping to market it, and you're reaching in your pocket, and you're bringing in the contractors and the painters and the yard person. You spend a lot of time there, right? And then the strategy of selling and open houses and bringing people in and listing things. There's a legality that you take on because you get sued for a lot of this as an agent. Like, it can be a very scary situation. So that's why managing brokers, all that stuff, is very important. What about the buyer's agent, though? Does a buyer's agent deserve to get paid that much? Sometimes they do. I can think of two homes right now that we sold to, and we were the buyer's agent on Queen Anne. Both of those homes have been completely transformed by our crews, because when we walked in, they were a derelict mess. One of them had a foundation that was crumbling. You walk in that foundation now, it's this incredible office and workout space that we were able to transform this space. There's also now an ADU in there where this family is now able to bring in $3,000 extra a month through this ADU. And then they also have a wonderful space where the family lives now as well. So in that particular transaction, we charged them one time, and that was on the buyer's side to help buy this property. But I've been working with them on this house for a year, well over a year. Then they told their friends about me, so we ended up helping them buy a place on Queen Anne, transform three rooms of that property. It just went online. I showed them how to build an Airbnb. This is the ad. This is how you do it. Here's our crews that are coming in now. It was our electrician and our plumber. It was our painter. It was our contractor that trained. So I didn't get paid to do any of that and to help figure all that out. I didn't get paid enough as a buyer's agent on that side, right? I didn't get paid enough for that. And you have to understand, there's a lot of buyer's agents, when they walk into homes, a lot of homes that we look at aren't turnkey. They need a lot of work. And so what happens a lot of times, your real estate agent should be the expert in saying, hey, I'm looking at a house right now. There's 29 things that have to be done to this house once we close on it. And a lot of those things are going to fall into my lap. We have to deal with all the knob and tube in this house. These folks are from out of town. They didn't even know what knob and tube was. And now I have to deal with the knob. So the buyer's agent, a lot of times on their side, they're coming in and having to do a lot of work and help too. It's not so, but for that buyer's agent that just takes that check, they disappear. And when you say, hey, I need to do some work on this place, and they send you some Google reviews, and they really don't have connections with other folks, yeah, that buyer's agent is not worth it. You shouldn't have paid them. You should find a realtor like myself or a realtor like Ron. So make sure when you're looking for a realtor that are they just there for the transaction, and when the house is bought or sold, they're gone? Or are they there for a lifetime? Like, and I shared this story about my friend April. We made a run at a house here the other day. We came in second on a $2 million house. I looked at this house for 24 years was a rental. I looked at the pictures online when it was a rental, and then I looked at how she transformed this house when she brought it to market. This house went almost $200,000 over asking price. That was all her as a realtor. And she has a 24-year relationship. She helped them buy that home 24 years ago. And now they're in their golden years. They're going to use that money. They're moving back to Sweden. That was all her. And in my mind, she didn't get paid enough. She didn't get paid enough for what she did when I looked at the pictures of when that was a rental. And a lot of times, it is very rare that I can't think of a house ever that somebody handed me a key and it was turnkey and we just listed it. And if that's all you're doing as a seller agent, you deserve to get paid. And on the buying side, for a really good agent out there, it's a lot of work, you guys, but that deserves to be talked about and negotiated up front. And if your realtor won't do it, yeah, move on. Call someone else. Hey, you guys, if you need us, you can call us, ronadonsitdown.com. Thanks for listening to this episode of today's show. If you need a buyer playbook or a seller playbook, or you're thinking about investing, Ron, we're here for you. We do something called a Ron and Don Sit Down.
Yeah, you can book one online, or you can just email me directly, ron@ronadon.com. We have buyers playbooks, sellers playbooks. And we'll also, just like Don said, we will help educate you on different strategies that will vastly improve your life.
Yeah. And we love real estate, you guys. We love seeing how it can help build wealth for you slowly. It's called the snowball of wealth. We love that. We love real estate changing your lives. And also, we're not afraid to roll up our sleeves, jump in the dump truck ourselves. Sometimes we have to pull out the rake, pull out the saw, pull out the hammer, and get busy when we're bringing a property to market. We just have the spirit of whatever it takes. And there's a lot of good realtors out there that are like us, you guys. So make sure you hire that kind of realtor, because we are out there. We're advocates. We're your friends, right? We're great negotiators, and in this case, we're also your broadcasters and your neighbors. Again, thanks for listening to this episode of The Ron and Don Show. Get signed up for The Nation News at ronanddon.com. If you want to sit down, ronanddonsitdown.com, right? Also, ronanddonradio.com. It's all under the umbrella of ronanddon.com. For Ron, myself, our good friend Paul, who's producing today's show, Alex and John that work on this and the newsletter, Charlie the dog, and my friend G-Force O'Neill, you keep your head up and your shoulders back. We'll see you next time. You've been listening to The Ron and Don Show on the Ron and Don Radio Network.
Now keep your head up and your shoulders back and keep blowing that trumpet, and we'll see you next time.
Only
on the Ron and Don Radio Network.